traditionalists like to present St. Thomas Aquinas, who lived in the 13th century, as the bulwark, the peak of unquestioning orthodoxy. He is the model for all theologians, we are told. To quote Pope Leo XIII, he is able to overturn the dangerous principles of the new order. Was that not why Thomas Aquinas was declared patron of Catholic universities, colleges and schools? The message is, if we could only absorb Thomas Aquinas' mental discipline, we would not be caught up in the woolly thinking of our modern age, like imagining women may one day preside over the Eucharist. But does this do justice to Thomas Aquinas, the mystic, the seeker, the revolutionary champion of truth? Thomas Aquinas studied theology at the University of Naples, where the study of the natural sciences and secular scholars was encouraged. Thomas read Aristotle at a time when Aristotle's complete philosophy was a forbidden topic at most other European universities. It is conveniently forgotten that throughout his life, but especially when teaching in Paris, Thomas Aquinas was discredited and attacked for depending on secular authors and for rigorously applying the principle of truth to every aspect of faith. This loyalty to truth is relevant when we consider how Thomas Aquinas assessed the question of admitting women to the priesthood. Thomas held that a theologian's opinion is as valid as his arguments. What then were his reasons for stating that the female sex is an impediment to receiving holy orders? Thomas Aquinas enumerated three reasons. 1. Scripture forbids women to teach in church or exercise authority over men. 2. The women deacons in the early church were not sacramentally ordained. 3. The female sex cannot represent Christ because women are incomplete human beings. How do his arguments hold up to scrutiny? To prove that women may not teach, Thomas quoted 1 Corinthians 11, 1-11 and 1 Timothy 2:12. However, these passages refer to restrictions imposed on women because of specific circumstances in local communities. It is invalid to draw general principles from them. In fact, the Church itself acknowledges this today. Canon law, church law, allows women to be deputed as readers, servers, cantors, preachers, leaders of prayer services, ministers of baptism and communion. And so, to teach in church and have authority over men, as we read in Timothy. Thus, the first argument goes by the board. As to the women deacons of the early church, Thomas dismissed them as, I quote, women who merely shared in some action of a deacon, namely in performing readings in church. End of quote. If he had known, as we do now, that women deacons were given a full sacramental ordination through the same ritual that ordained the men, to be full deacons, it would have stopped him in his tracks. For being the great theologian of the sacraments he was, he would have recognized in the diaconate received by women the full matter and form that constitute holy orders. It would have been enough to make him change his mind, or would it? Like his contemporaries, Thomas Aquinas lacked good information on what constitutes the difference between men and women. According to the Greco-Roman view of procreation, a view that predominated until the 18th century, even throughout the rest of Europe, there exists only one sex, but in two forms. A female person is a watered-down variant of the male. The act of generation is accompanied by heat, they thought, by the vital spirit, which is the element that causes the difference between men and women. Only men have enough heat to produce seed, which they cast into their partner's womb as seed is cast into the earth. Fetuses develop their full potential, their maleness, if they amass a decisive surplus of heat or of vital spirit in the early stages in the womb. Female children are the result of insufficient heat being absorbed by the fetus. What could have been a full man then turns out to be a woman. Thomas Aquinas himself says, I quote, "A female is deficient and unintentionally caused, for the active power of the semen always seeks to produce a thing completely like itself, something male." So if a female is produced, this must be because the semen is weak, or because the material provided by the mother is unsuitable, or because of the action of some external factor, such as the winds from the south, which makes the atmosphere humid. End of quote. Thomas Aquinas saw woman's deficiency confirmed in her inferior intellectual powers. Living in a state of subjection to man, woman is not fully an image of God, he says, as every man is. It is precisely for this reason, because a woman is only an incomplete male, that Thomas Aquinas believed that a woman cannot represent Christ. For at the Eucharist, the priest is a sign of Christ. Since it is not possible, he says, in the female sex to signify eminence of degree, it follows that she cannot receive the sacrament of holy orders. Eminence of degree of cumanus. Would Thomas Aquinas have been able to keep to this line of argument if he had known, as we do, that male and female lie on a level, that they are two biologically distinct and complementary sexes, equally responsible for procreation? Would he not have conceded that the woman too can signify eminence of degree? The texts of Thomas Aquinas and of the other medieval scholars whom the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in Rome quotes in support of its ban on women priests, have been fully published and analyzed on our website, www.womenpriest.org. None of those texts provides reasons that hold up to scrutiny today. And Thomas Aquinas would have been the first to admit it. Sacred doctrine is a matter of argument, he taught, in the sense that theology must prove what it teaches. And what about learning from biology, from our present-day biology? His principle was, I quote, "Truth, wherever found, is ever the truth of God," end of quote. Accepting women priests would have been a big step for Thomas Aquinas. But does he not say in his beautiful hymn Sacris Solemniis, a hymn we still sing on Maundy Thursday, "Recedant vetera nova sint omnia," words Thomas wrote himself, "Let what is outdated recede, let everything be new."